welcome to Drive Forward Foundation. We are a charity that enables care-experienced young people to achieve their full potential through sustainable and fulfilling employment. My name's Serena, and I'm part of the communications team here at DFF. And today, I'll be speaking to one of our newest partners, Rebecca Clark, who has a couple of businesses herself and is care-experienced. Rebecca, thank you so much for taking the time out today to come and talk to me.
Thank you, Serena. It's nice to be in this little pod with you.
Yeah, we've actually got a proper studio, which is quite exciting.
It's very exciting. I was saying I didn't think I'd actually been in a recording studio kind of through lockdown. I lied because I have once, but this is very cosy indeed.
Yeah, and it's nice to have a proper setup and just, you know, give the space for the talent that's sitting in front of me.
God, don't raise expectations too high.
So just to start us off, do you want to maybe just tell us a little bit about your two businesses? So I know you've got The Beautiful Soup, which I love the name of.
Thank you.
And Happy Marlowe.
Yes. So my background is in communications. And so I've been working in communications, campaigns and marketing for over 20 years now. And back in 2012, I set up Beautiful Soup. As a consultancy, it is essentially me. And I work with clients on a range of projects and themes. But the main strand that runs through it is that I focus on social impact communications. So that really means things that matter to all of us as people and planet, whether that's health and well-being or education. I have a homelessness charity that I work with.
Amazing.
So a really broad range, and I've always been drawn to those kind of altruistic or more kind of human elements of life. And so that's what Beautiful Soup does. And I will often partner with other specialists and talent to get the work done. And yeah, the other business I have is Happy Marlowe. And I launched this officially last year. I had the idea actually before the pandemic, so in 2019. And Happy Marlowe is on a mission to support young children, so from 3 to 11 years old, with their emotional well-being. And it's in recognition of the fact that so many young children, and we're really seeing this happen younger and younger, which is heartbreaking, are having a number of issues with how they deal with their feelings and anxiety and stress. And there's all kinds of triggers that are responsible for this. And then, of course, the pandemic happened, and we're seeing that all children are being affected to some extent. So Happy Marlowe, we're bringing holistic modalities, so holistic tools and techniques such as breath work and sound healing and emotional freedom technique, which is sometimes known as tapping. These are all science-backed and evidence-based, but what I love about them is that they're really gentle but powerful, and they're also accessible, and they work. That's the bonus. So yeah, we're raising awareness around these modalities as a bit of an education piece, because some of them are new and children and their parents or caregivers or teachers might not know about them. We were at Wilderness Festival earlier this year, which was really exciting because that was the first time we were able to do something in person with children and their families.
Amazing.
And yeah, we have big dreams and big plans for Happy Marlowe. So yeah, those are the two of the things that I'm concentrating on just now.
That's amazing. So what would you say has really drawn you towards kind of early intervention with children?
I mean, Happy Marlowe really is a personal story and a personal mission. And it comes back to my own childhood. I mentioned I had the idea a couple of years ago, and it was around the time I'd turned 40. And I was feeling really reflective, like a lot of people are around those big birthdays. And although I was incredibly excited about turning 40 and very much saw this as the second half of my life, I really noticed or became aware of a number of things around my own healing journey. And I had this recognition really that, gosh, I've spent the last 20 years really coming to terms with all of the things that happened in the first 20 years of my life.
Right.
And as I looked around, I realized I'm not alone in that. A lot of adults are really struggling, whether they're aware of it or not, of trauma that they've carried from their early years. And I think trauma can feel like a big word, a scary word. word, and it's all relative. One person's trauma looks very different to another's, and I think we can be very good at diminishing some of the challenging things that have happened in our lives. But it's all of our personal stories, and so that really intrigued me as to, okay, if we kind of acknowledge that most of us don't get out of childhood unscathed to some extent, the stories are different, the characters are different, the themes are different, but if that's a universal truth, what can we do about that? And I really noticed that mental health and well-being, definitely there's more conversation around it, which is great, but I really noticed that younger children were still being overlooked to a large extent. A lot of the resources available are aimed at older children, and we actually see studies show that there's a 10-year gap, like a deficit, between when children first start having problems or experiencing difficulties in this way to them then actually seeking or getting help.
Yeah.
And the average age of that is around 14.
Right,
and so if we go back 10 years, there we are.
Wow.
In those very early years. So that's why I really want to focus on prevention as much as possible and giving children the tools as and when these things come up that they can turn to. So that's why we're focusing on young children.
That's amazing. And I think that is so powerful. I think one thing that we've definitely noticed with our work is we need to start earlier, because when a child is taken into care, that is traumatic in itself, removing a child from their family, regardless of the reason.
Yes.
And so if there's no support around that, or if there's no awareness of that damage, then it leaves that young person kind of set up for these challenges without the guidance. We've recently just had a virtual mental health awareness event recently, and it was really inspiring to hear so many organisations want to come around and increase the level of mental health support for care leavers, because there is an acceptance that there is mental health support for children going through care, but not necessarily when they leave. It's like once you turn 18, you phase out, it's described as the cliff edge, and it's not there anymore when this is such a huge step. But actually what you're saying, if we start much, much earlier, we can actually set them up for a lot more success in their life.
I believe so. I mean, I find it really interesting how much has changed since I was little. So I was put into emergency foster care when I was 10 months old. So I don't remember that.
Yeah.
And ended up staying with my family, my foster family, who subsequently adopted me when I was 3. And they stopped fostering at that time, but they did start fostering again when I was 8.
Okay.
And it's very interesting when I think about my experience of adoption in my early years, and then later for foster children who were coming to live with us, there wasn't any mental health support. There was nothing. Yeah. And nobody even really spoke about it, which I find fascinating knowing what I know now. So I'm pleased to hear you say that it sounds like at least there's some acknowledgement or some support in place. And I do know from other people that going through adoption for adoptees and adoptive parents, there's some counselling that's offered, and there simply wasn't anything like that. And so I come from a generation where it was very much a case of, let's just get on with it.
Mm.
This is what it is. And sweep any of the difficulties under the carpet, really.
Really, yeah. And looking back on the knowledge that you have now, what is it that you wish that you had?
I wish that my parents had more support, full stop, around navigating that, navigating what it means to adopt and to foster, actually, because their focus was very practical.
Okay.
You know, it was loving, but it was very kind of practical around providing, you know, a safe home to live in and making sure we went to school and all of those things that you'd expect. But they come from a generation. I mean, my parents were much older. They're 42. 2 years older than me. And so going back to the late 70s, 80s, that was very unusual, quite unusual to have older parents. And so if you kind of think about their stories and their childhood, my mum had a much older dad. So she was really kind of brought up in a Victorian household too.
Okay.
And they're war babies, my parents.
Yeah.
And so when I'm very interested in generational trauma, because in my family, I can see the results of that, you know, growing up with, my mum grew up with a father who had been in the First World War.
Wow.
And, you know, we hear about in history lessons or in documentaries around the trauma that those men experienced and then very much suppressed, not talking about it. And so, when we think of PTSD and those other kind of effects of something like that, I can see how it was kind of passed down a bit in my family and the home that I grew up in. But it was very much, we just we don't talk about it. And my mum would even say things like, you know, talking about it makes it worse.
Right.
Whereas I come from a school of thought that you have to feel it to heal it.
Mm.
Like, we have to talk about it. It's not going anywhere.
Yes.
We're just pretending otherwise.
Yeah.
But I recognise and I can see that that's generational. My parents did the best that they could. And it's wonderful that we are now living in a time where we're really starting to see the stigma taken away more and more from mental health. We're having more open conversations. There's some great, you know, champions and ambassadors in our country and society who are kind of leading the way around that, which is brilliant. But we have a lot of work to do.
Yeah. We're not right at the beginning, but, you know, it's progress at least. And we just want to keep that momentum moving so that care leavers or care experienced young people don't fall through the gap in what's missing from our mental health services at the moment. But yeah, no, that's really, really interesting. So kind of going through your experience, you said that your parents fostered other people alongside you. Did you have a lot of people kind of coming and going through the house?
We really did. I think I said I was 8 when they started fostering again. And I don't know, an estimate? Well, over 50 children must have lived with us. And some of them were long term. We had a couple of, you know, really lovely stories. You know, adoption is always bittersweet.
Yeah.
But we did have a couple of sets of siblings who were with us longer term, but then went on to be adopted with their forever families. But then equally, I remember being away at some kind of activity camp somewhere when I must have been about 11 or 12. And when I came back, there were 5 sisters.
Wow.
5 sisters from literally like a babe in arms up to maybe a 6-year-old.
Wow.
And they stayed with us just for a few days. They were so sweet. All of them had names beginning with Sh. Which I always remember. So yeah, a real range. We had a lot of babies. If I'm remembering rightly, I don't know if this is still the case, but foster carers could kind of say that they had specialisms or preferences with different ages. And my mum just absolutely loved and loves babies. So we did have a lot of babies and toddlers. And they also, my parents have kind of made this rule that no foster child should be older than me for some reason. I will say, I think they were very sensitive in their way about me being adopted and then wanting to make sure that I felt secure in that when we, you know, at suddenly 8, we had lots of children coming and going. So yeah, there was something around that that they were trying to be mindful of.
Yeah.
Because I must say, I have 2 big sisters who are my parents' biological children. And so Dawn is 14 years older than me and Amanda is 18 years older than me. And so you have to imagine when I come along and, you know, when I kind of start remembering things, I pretty much got 4 parents.
Yes.
I've got these 4 adults around me making a big fuss. I had a lot of attention. And so I was kind of like an only child, really, because I was so much younger. And so that was a transition when I was 8 to,
I have to share this space with other people now.
I'm not the star of the show anymore. And so I think my parents were always kind of just trying to manage that essentially in the best way that they could.
Yeah. Oh, no, that sounds lovely as well, because at least you got to meet a lot of people. But then in the way your parents were trying to be mindful of.
Yeah, they were.
You're part of our family and things. So that's really lovely.
Yeah.
And so when you got older, did you notice anything kind of changing with being adopted?
Well, gosh, there's so many different things about my childhood and adolescence. I mean, I laugh then when you're saying about getting older, because what came to mind is my sister, Elaine and Priscilla, came to live with us when I would have been about 11.
Okay.
They're siblings and they, you know, they're still my sisters. They are part of our family. But Elaine and I did not get on. We did not get on when we were growing up, which is funny because we're very, very close now. As soon as I went to university, it shifted. But yes, that was challenging.
Did you notice anything changing in terms of the level of support that you were receiving?
Oh, no, never changed. It just it continued. And so I had a really tough time at secondary school. I was bullied quite badly from the age of 14.
Right.
And it was nothing to do with my adoption.
At all.
It was almost as though the bullies knew, like, we don't go there.
Oh,
like,
okay.
we can be this bad, but we won't be that bad.
Yeah.
I should say, I didn't mention before, but I'm a mixed race woman, and my family are white, so I'm a transracial adoptee. So that presented all kinds of challenges. And again, I must kind of refer to this time that I grew up, because things are so different now.
Yeah.
And I grew up in Watford first, and then we moved to Luton when I was 8. Lots of things happened when I was 8. Yeah, my big sister got married when I was 8 as well. That was traumatic for me. Very much felt like she was leaving me. That was the first time I realised the abandonment issues. And of course, at 8, I wouldn't have called it that or articulated it. But I was devastated when Amanda got married. I was really devastated about that. But yeah, all of these different things, where it's kind of bullying at school, and when we moved a location when I was 8, that was quite difficult. And so I really just kind of grew up with this sense of, I just need to get away. Like, I'm almost not meant to be here.
Okay.
And I just need to get away. This is not me, if you can understand what I mean by that. I always felt I didn't fit in because I was so visibly different. I don't mean within my family.
Okay.
I mean within my community.
Okay.
So it's this sense of being different, being adopted, being brown. My family were in the Salvation Army, so we're religious.
Okay.
It's like, how many things? You know, particularly when you're a teenager, or you know, just coming into your adolescence, you just want to be like everyone else.
Yeah.
And just kind of blend into the background. But I often refer to it as I was visible for all the wrong reasons.
Mm.
And so I very much focused on, I need to get the hell out of here and go to university. That was the dream ticket out of here for me.
Okay.
It's been part of my family's narrative. From a very young age, I always remember my parents saying, you're so bright, you're so clever, you will be going to university. And I'm the first in my family that did go to university.
Oh,
so it was like it was a big thing for my family to be saying this. It was like our collective dream, if you will.
Okay, yeah.
And so it did end up over, you know, years of kind of creating this golden aura around university.
Yeah.
This was going to be the answer, if you like, to everything. And I did go to university, and you know, I went to Liverpool University, which I absolutely loved. But I will say that particularly in that first year, you know, it's moving away from home. And I think everyone finds that challenging, regardless of their circumstances. But what I found, it was my first lesson of wherever you go, there you'll be. Because, of course, I ran all the way up the M6 to the northwest, but I took all of my baggage with me.
Sure.
And I didn't appreciate that until I got there. I'm like, why are these same horrible feelings still coming up? And why am I, you know, why is not that much changed inside? And so it really started, and it was very, very early stages, but of my, what I call my healing journey, really.
Mm.
And recognizing I can't run away from this.
Yeah.
It's not going to work like that.
No.
I can't change the background. I can't change the faces. This is with me. And so, yeah, not all the time, but intermittently over the next 20 years. And still now, right? It's an ongoing thing.
Yeah.
I was often seeking out help, whether that would be through traditional talking therapy with, you know, psychologists, CBT, cognitive behavioral therapy. I tried, I didn't like that. hypnotherapy. But I've always been very kind of spiritual, even from being a child, and very a little bit woo-woo, I suppose. Like, I grew up with a mum who totally believed in angels, and I did too, and we would talk about these things together. So I was always very attracted and open to holistic or alternative ways alongside the more traditional.
Yeah.
So I remember, like, in my early 20s, I went and did Reiki 1.
Amazing.
had to go at that. All kinds of things. And so it's very interesting now, looking back and seeing what's happened with Happy Marlowe.
Yeah.
You know, I think it's Steve Jobs who said that you can't make sense of your life while you're living it. You need to have space and hindsight and reflection to look back and join the dots.
Yeah.
And I can totally see that in so many different areas of my life, but particularly with this work in this new chapter, because around the time I was thinking of Happy Marlowe, I was actively looking for a change, looking for a different contribution that I could make in the world, because I'd been fortunate enough with my work to work on some really brilliant campaigns and fascinating, you know, topics and themes that really were making a difference in the world. But what I really began to feel was, yeah, but what about these haven't been on my instigation, or it's not my brief, or it's not personal. And so I actually joined a little coaching group when I was in my early 40s. And it was during that process, you know, it's kind of like a lot of people, I've got to find my purpose. I've got to find my purpose. And thinking that it was this thing external to me. And Peter, who was the coach I was working with at the time, is like, the main thing I just want you to do during this process is to just chill out, mainly.
I think that's something that we could all do.
Yeah, it's like with anything. If you're frantically searching for something, guess what? You're probably not going to find it. So it was kind of like, chill out. And he really helped me nail my meditation practice, which I have to say, I'd been recommended by various friends over the years, you know, you should meditate, it will really help. And I was like, yeah. But the rumours, at least in my case, were true. Is I found that such a game changer, and I continue my practice today. And by the way, what that means for me is simply sitting really quietly at the start of the day, putting 10 minutes timer on my phone and just being with my breath. And it's as simple as that, because I know meditation can sound crazy or intimidating or difficult, or what if I get it wrong? And I know there are lots of different schools of thought on this, but this is what it means to me. And I think it's just about having that moment of mindfulness, which we can all benefit from. And maybe sitting still makes you feel anxious and awful. Fine. So maybe it's dancing for 10 minutes in the morning or swimming or going for a walk or whatever. But I do think we all deserve and owe it to ourselves to figure out what it is that works for us in that way, and just try and make it a daily habit.
Yeah.
And so during that process with Peter, I always remember him saying, I just want you to follow the breadcrumbs. Like, I just want you to just kind of be a bit aware of what's coming up and what's going on. And it was during that process, and we were looking, we did some kind of shadow work and inner child work a way that I hadn't really done before.
Yeah.
And there were about 10 of us in this group. And it was during that process I had that light bulb moment. We all kind of know it. People joke about, you know, your childhood being challenging and or tell me about your childhood, you know, that phrase of therapy. But it was in that moment, I guess it's because I was also, part of me was ready to have that acknowledgement and get that curiosity. It just all kind of made sense that, of course, I'm here to help children, because I'm almost giving my inner child the help that she didn't get when she needed it.
Yes.
And that's really what it's about, because a lot of people, I have a little 3-year-old, and so she was born around this time, and a lot of people say, oh, is it since you had Aura, is this why you came up with this idea? I'm like, well, yeah, but no.
Yeah. Because, well, it's still about me.
It's still about me. But it is that. It is. It's this real mission to help other children, having empathy for other children, because my inner child is still within me, and she's still in pain at times.
Mm. But that's really beautiful that you can hear what little Rebecca needed and can act on that. And I think, like you were saying, so many of us look, I guess, to outward sources for our purpose and what are we supposed to do with our lives, when actually we probably do have the answer just within ourselves, and it's about taking that moment to reflect on that. So that's really amazing that you've been able to start your two businesses on one particularly focused on early intervention and just enjoying that journey.
Yes, I do believe that our purpose is within us, and actually a lot of the time we're living it already without realizing. It's not something that's to be found outside of us. It's what brings you joy, or what makes you angry, or what, you know, what gets your attention. The things that you're doing, just living your life already, is there. It's just, oh, but I'm looking at it in this way now, or this is making sense to me in a different way.
Amazing. And so through all of your work looking back and early intervention, that kind of thing, you've found your way to drive forward.
Yeah, I have, which I'm so excited to be getting to know you all and partnering with you in this way. It's really interesting, because Happy Marlowe is for all children, for all 3 to 11-year-olds.
Yeah.
But fostered and adopted children have a very special place in my and Happy Marlowe's heart. So actually, as part of our business model, whenever somebody buys a subscription to one of our programs or a ticket to an event, one will be gifted to a fostered or adopted child.
Oh, amazing.
So there's this kind of pay it forward within the setup. And I've always wanted, and I have ambitions for as we grow and, you know, become profitable, that some of that money will be donated to supporting care leavers. And so that was how I kind of sought you out and got in touch, because I don't need to set up a charity.
Yes.
It's about how can we support people in whatever area it is that you're passionate about. How can we support people who are already doing the work on the ground? How can we help them with the things that they need, whether that is fundraising money or time or access or whatever it might be? So, yeah, I'm really pleased to be at the beginning of hopefully a very long-term partnership with you all.
Definitely. And we'd obviously love to have you as long as you want to stay. So that's great. What kind of things have you been getting involved with at Drive Forward so far?
Yeah, so I joined a Coffee and Connect the other week with the lovely Lucy. It was around Canadian Thanksgiving. So we were talking about gratitude. It was very informative, actually, because Lucy pointed out that the dictionary definitions of thankful and gratitude are different. Yes. I stumbled then because as I was speaking, I was like, oh no, you're going to ask me what the definitions are. And I can't quite remember the but I just remember thinking, oh, they just seem so the same to me.
Yes. I attended a Coffee and Connect with Lucy and I think it was about motivation. And what was it? It was about shame and guilt. We kind of use those interchangeably, but actually they're two different definitions. And one is linked to like committing a crime.
Okay.
And then one is about... like you say, I can't remember the definition myself, but it's like, it was really interesting. And it was like what you were saying before about perspective.
Yeah.
You know, you do know the answers because they're always there inside of you and you just need that moment to look at a different angle. And so it's interesting with these Coffee and Connect sessions, which are open to all care experienced young people, our partners and mentors, just to kind of get an insight into what can help them get ready for the world of work. So that's really great that you got something quite powerful from it as well, just knowing that perspective between being thankful and gratitude.
Yeah, it was really, really interesting. And then the other thing, I mean, one of my superpowers, and we should all, you know, be happy to talk about our superpowers, is connecting people. Like, I've just always been very good at meeting people, being cheeky, putting myself out there. And equally, if anyone ever gets in touch with me and ask for advice or a coffee or whatever, I'm always happy to say yes. And so one of the things I've loved doing already, your colleagues got in touch about a young man who is working in the fashion industry as a model.
Amazing.
And he's really interested in understanding more about the fashion business and recognizes, which is very smart, that perhaps his career as a model has a timeline on it.
Yeah.
And he's really keen to better understand and have experience behind the scenes, whether that's in fashion PR or with a fashion house itself or whatever it might be. And so some of your colleagues got in touch to ask if I had any work experience or anything like that within Beautiful Soup that might be appropriate. Well, I don't do fashion, but I probably know some people that do.
Yeah.
So it's really lovely because very quickly I sent a couple of emails out, and within an afternoon, I think we'd kind of got a work experience at Liberty in London.
Amazing.
And a lead at a fashion magazine and a possible internship with a fashion PR. And so that, it just brings me so much joy. And it was, what was really lovely was introducing Drive Forward to some of these other people in my network, and then the email got passed on and so more people found out about your work. And it's, I love these kind of ripple effects. And the main thing, because I then was being copied on various emails from, you know, the lady at Liberty and others, just people just felt so good, because people, it feels good to do good.
Yes.
And people just want opportunities to do so, because often you just don't know how or where, or you get busy and don't even think about it. And so I'm really excited to be doing, have more of those opportunities, because it's one of those things, we should all do what comes easy.
Yes.
And when things are easy, we tend to enjoy them. And so I'm glad to be able to bring that to the Drive Forward community.
That's amazing. And I think that just shows actually that, you know, we do all have superpowers. And I think there's probably more of an acknowledgement of that. Oh, we don't hype ourselves up. We have to kind of dampen down our effects on things. And so even though you weren't readily available to help with fashion in particular, you knew people who could. That itself is just, it's so powerful. So for like partners or people looking to get involved, even if you don't know how to, just start the conversation. Yeah. And actually you might be the link to someone who might be able to help one of our young people get into an area of work that they're really, really interested in, that they would love their career to be in, or just have a bit of experience just to test it out. So, you know, that's really worthwhile. And then, like you were saying, I was so happy to actually see your connection reaching that outcome for that young person. And that's completely amazing.
Definitely. And yeah, I mean, I would echo what you said to any other businesses or business owners who are thinking or intrigued about partnering with you, because you're right. It doesn't have to be necessarily direct in your business, although it can be. But when you've been working for a while and you're out in the world, you know people, and everything is about people. every single thing. One of my friends always says that we are all the answer to each other's prayers. And that is for everything. So, you know, if you're trying to rent somewhere to live, behind that decision is a landlord who is a person.
Yeah.
If you're trying to get a loan at the bank, that is a person. And so I think it's useful for us all to remember the humanity of one another. Rather, I think, you know, businesses and brands and authority and red tape can make things seem so unattainable or complicated or difficult. And if we just remember it's people, it's people that we're dealing with, I at least find that it means, well, I can always ask the question and they can ignore me, or they might say no, but they might say yes.
Yeah. And it's about banking on them saying yes. Because what's the worst thing they can say is no. We have a young person working with us, and his kind of thing that he really wants to work on is people versus paper. You know, our, you know, interview processes, or the way we get jobs at the moment, is you look at a piece of paper, our CVs, our covering letters, but you don't see the person behind it. You don't see the dedication and the passion, or, you know, they might not have the exact skill set for your job, but it doesn't mean they can't go out and get it or learn through being mentored by you. So it's just, I think that's one thing that Drive Forward, we really try to just highlight the person, the individual in front of us, like what are their needs, how can we help, and where can we source those opportunities. So it's great to have people like yourself partnering with us to help us get there.
It's incredibly important, because one of the things I'm mindful of is when you are leaving care, you often don't have a network. A lot of young people don't have a network. You know, if your parents haven't worked in a particular profession, or, you know, it can feel so exclusive and really hard to get into whatever area you might want to. And so I love that as Drive Forward, you're providing that community and the beginnings of a network. But I think it's something that, I know it's incredibly important to get out, to put yourself forward, to get in touch with people. I didn't know anyone, but I'm so grateful that I've just always been a bit cheeky. I just have. And so that's how I've kind of, you know, been able to do some of the things I've been able to do.
Yeah.
And that's why I'm really keen. You know, I always say when I meet young people, just generally, if there's anyone on my LinkedIn that you want to be introduced to, or if there's anything, my network is your network.
Amazing.
And generally, if I have a good enough relationship with someone, because a lot of people on LinkedIn, you don't actually know them. But if I do know someone, I generally can pretty much tell them to have a coffee with you, or at least, you know, have a chat.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think when people are in that position, and the way things are going, it's so competitive. It's so hard. It's such a different landscape, say, when I started my career. It's those of us who are a bit further along in our professional path, I really think it's part of our responsibility to be helping those who are coming behind us.
Yeah. And that's utterly amazing. If we had more people who share the same mindset, the opportunities that our young people who have gone through care that may have missed out on, they wouldn't. They would all be there, and be up to them to be willing to put in the work and be able to take those opportunities by the horns and see where they go. And so many young people that we do work with have that motivation, or don't have the time to think about it, because they've got so many things on their plate, trying to juggle, trying to bid on housing. You know, they may have dependents of their own. Yeah, they just never had the opportunity, or had the person sit with them and be like, actually, let's get you into this opportunity. Let's teach you how to get there. Because I don't know what it was like for you, but like my first interview, I kind of went and, you know, winged it. But I could have just asked my parents, how do I do this? And my support network was there. But for many of our young people, they don't have that same connection or the same network that they can rely on.
Yeah, I always come back to that idea of how talent is equally distributed, but opportunity is not.
Yeah.
And, you know, nepotism is real. And so, I'm keen to explore as many ways as possible that we can start kind of reducing that gap and actually creating opportunities for people to have, to get that exposure, to get in the door.
Yeah.
And then, you know, run with it once they're able to do that.
That's amazing. Yeah, definitely. And I think with more and more partnerships and more people coming on board with Drive Forward and seeing the work that we do, you know, it makes it much more achievable.
Mm.
And it's just inspiring to know that for all the young people getting involved with our services, like there are a range of pathways that they could be taking. And that's just so beautiful to see. And I hope that the young people who are working with us can just see how much that they have to add to any workplace or anything that they do. in the world. We had our mental health event. One of the speakers says, you know, care leavers, they're in our present and they're in our futures. Mm-hmm. And that really stuck out with me. Like, mm-hmm. yeah, these young people are here and they deserve the world because they live here and they're going to be adding to it. So one last question perhaps before we wrap it up. So what would you say in a nutshell to anyone looking to get involved with Drive Forward? What would be your piece of advice?
Well, just do it.
Done.
It's quite straightforward. And I think, you know, there can be barriers around, well, have I got the time? Have I got the resources? What is this going to require from me? But what I love is that you make it easy for businesses to, there are different levels and different amounts of time that you can give to this. You can, it seems like you can give as little as much as you choose. And so I think, I mean, ideally, every business should be doing something along these lines. We're seeing how much the broader society is looking at businesses to be taking more of a stand in their communities. And I think there's kind of no reason why not. So all I would say, I'm happy to speak to anyone if they'd like to hear from me. But otherwise, to get in touch with Lucy and Miranda on your team and just have a conversation, at least initially, and see, and not be afraid of what it might mean in terms of, is it going to take me away from my business?
Sure.
Because actually what we're talking about is the opportunity of potentially working with young people who can add so much value to your business.
Definitely. And I think I can't add much more to that. So thank you so much for taking the time to talk to me today, Rebecca. I've had an amazing time.
Thank you for having me. It's my pleasure.
No problem at all. Thank you so much for listening. And if you've been inspired by anything you've heard today, either as a care experienced young person looking to get involved with our services, a potential new partner looking to give more opportunities, or simply want to support our work, head on over to driveforwardfoundation.org, where you'll find all that and more. We are Drive Forward Foundation, momentum made by you.